From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when Governor Andrew Cuomo awakened the long-slumbering debate about high-speed rail in New York State. Now, to be fair, if you've ever traveled via high-speed rail in Europe, for example, that is not what we're talking about today. Probably not, anyway. And as my colleague David Andriotta pointed out in City Newspaper, maybe we should call it higher-speed rail. Andriotta offered his criticism and his skepticism in a piece for City that reviewed the starts and stops and struggles of higher-speed rail in the state. Studies in the past found that higher-speed rail running from Niagara Falls to New York City would cost billions of dollars, and the costs go up depending on how fast you want the trains to go. The governor said during his State of the State address last week that he wants a panel of engineers who will re-examine plans from the past, question and rethink all of the old assumptions, and then come up with a new plan for how to build, in the governor's words, a faster, greener, more reliable high-speed rail in New York. And the advocates cheered. And the critics scoffed. Andriotta noted that California has a similar dream, and yet California recently scaled back its own vision for high-speed rail. Easy to say you want it, harder to make it happen in reality. So this hour, a debate about what this new version of higher-speed rail could be in New York. We'll take your feedback as well. David Andriotta, editor of City Newspaper, fly in the ointment. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Evan. It's good to be here.
The realist on the panel, have you traveled via high-speed rail?
Never.
Is that right?
Yeah, never. You know, I've never been to Europe. Been to Asia. Wasn't on the maglev.
Oh, so you've been to Asia, but you didn't do the maglev thing.
Right.
And haven't been to Europe. Okay.
But I haven't been to Europe.
All right, very good.
It's on my bucket list.
And there you go. Arian Horbovitz is the creator of the Urban Phoenix blog. Welcome back to the program. Have you traveled via high-speed rail?
Kind of. I have traveled in Europe. My wife and I took a trip to Scotland. And while it wasn't necessarily high-speed rail, it was dedicated rail. So there was no freight traffic on this particular track. It was 100 miles an hour, and it was a beautiful, amazing, comfortable trip, and it was incredible. I've also had the pleasure of riding the Acela up and down the Northeast Corridor, which again is a great example in this country of what higher speed rail, as you call it, can be.
All right, Tess Padmore is here, president of Wolf Clan LLC. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Tell us what Wolf Clan LLC is.
Wolf Clan was started when I retired, and what I did was invented a swim cap. I invented a swim cap for people who have a lot of hair and can't find a swim cap. But I also have gone on to include in my product line caps for people who are going through chemotherapy and people who are skiing and snowboarding and doing all sorts of things. But in my past life, I worked for the state of Alaska for a long time, and I worked for the Department of Transportation. And so I was very much interested in this because of my experience with analysis of the high-speed boats, And so I was interested in talking about this today.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Thank you very much. So David, I'm going to start with you just because for City, what you did was you sort of laid out where we've been with this. Now, the governor is saying, to be fair, he wants to know where we've been, but he doesn't want to repeat. He wants to start fresh. But you think that there are lessons to draw from just the optimism met by the reality in the past on this?
Sure. And I also wonder, whether the governor's new panel is going to be working toward a foregone conclusion. I mean, it's pretty obvious that he wants this to happen. And I want to be clear, too. You know, I got a lot of criticism for that column. It was titled New York's High-Speed Rail Fail. The criticism was that it unfairly attacked high-speed rail, and the skepticism that I had was such that it should never happen. On the contrary, I'd love to see high-speed rail. I mean, I think anyone would love to travel in greater comfort at greater speeds. I just wonder whether the Empire Corridor, which is the corridor that stretches from Niagara Falls to New York City, and really what we're talking about is Niagara Falls to Albany, because Albany to New York is actually already pretty reliable. Although it's not high speed, but it's at least fairly reliable. Niagara Falls to Albany, through Rochester here is terrible. The Amtrak service is terrible. No, I would love to see high-speed rail. What I was simply calling for is that any panel that's going to look at this really looks at the market for it. And where I got a lot of criticism was, an analogy that I used in my column was we can't even support a coffee shop in the train station. There's not enough foot traffic there to support a coffee shop. Ergo, how can we support high-speed rail? Is there this sort of demand? I understand that that's an elementary analogy. I mean, I've got 750 words to write a column. You could write treatises on this stuff. And in fact, the studies that have been done, the last serious one was done in 2014. I believe it was a 500-page study. I have with me today to reference a 7-page sort of executive summary of it. So there's lots to be said on it. I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't think that it's realistic given the cost.
All right, before I go to the other side of the table, a couple of points here. Number one, when we look at what's happening in California, you find that pertinent to the current discussion in New York. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. So that was a high-speed rail line that they wanted to build in California between Los Angeles and San Francisco. And I don't recall exactly when work began on that, but the construction deadline, original deadline, was 2020. That is never going to happen, and Governor Gavin Newsom has since scaled that back, as you noted in your intro. The line will run just really in the Central Valley, and I don't know the exact the terminuses of that, but it's between Los Angeles and San Francisco. It doesn't link to Los Angeles, and it doesn't link to San Francisco. And the cost at that point was the cost of the initial project from LA to San Francisco was $33 billion. It has since ballooned to $77 billion. So it's sort of a runaway train, if you will, in terms of cost. And the deadline for getting it done was expanded to, I think, 2033. If I recall correctly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Just as an aside, are you aware of any large-scale government project where they projected a $50 billion cost and then halfway through they said, it's actually going to be 25?
The train station itself was 29 million. It was projected at 29 million. It came in at 44. So no, I'm not aware of that. And I'm also not aware of any large-scale government public works project that's worthwhile that generally finishes on time. I mean, look at the Big Dig.
It's like a 50% optimism tax. You know, like we've got an optimism that we can do it for X, but the tax is about 50% more than what you're projecting.
I think that was in a Simpsons episode.
Now,
let me also
read from David's piece for City about the actual speeds, because he is pointing out that when we hear high-speed rail, we may have different visions. If you've been to Europe, that may be your vision. If you haven't, it may be a different part of the United States. If you've been on the maglev, maybe that's your vision. Well, here's what David writes. Right now, the train in New York pokes along at an interminably slow 50 to 60 miles an hour. Trips from Rochester to New York City take anywhere between 7 and 9 hours by train, and that's if the trains are on time. The last study of the matter was a 2014 joint state and federal report that found increasing the average speed to 77 miles an hour, while topping out at 125, would cost $15 billion. Getting from Niagara Falls to New York City would take 6 hours on an express, 8 hours, 40 minutes on a regional train. Two slower high-speed alternatives that would average speeds of 61 and 63, respectively, and reach top speeds of 90 and 110, were projected to cost $5.6 and $6.3 billion. The report rejected as too expensive the fastest high-speed rail options, those bullet trains that zip around Europe at 190 miles an hour, and the magnetic levitation or maglev trains in China and Japan that top out at 225. The report put their price tag for New York at nearly $45 billion. Okay, so, but even if it's $10 billion, Dave, can this state find $10 billion to do this if it wants to?
I suppose there's bonding that could be done, but I mean, we're looking at a $6 billion deficit right now, and that deficit is projected to balloon to, I believe it's 8.3 in the next 3 years. So, I think that there are other transit imperatives that, you know, ought to be invested in first. I mean, look at some of the crumbling highways. Our bridges are in bad shape, as we know. I mean, stories have been done about that for years. It just seems to me like there are more productive ways to spend this money. And like I said, if the federal government wanted to get involved in this, I would be all for it, for a train from, you know, Washington to Boston, that type of corridor. I'm just not sure that this is the most prudent use of $15 billion in 2014, which surely today is more.
All right. So knowing Arian Horbovitz, he's dying to jump across the table at this. So I'm going to make him wait, and I'm going to start with Tess. Having worked in transportation in Alaska, having read David's piece, thinking about higher speed rail in New York State, what are your first thoughts that come to mind on his criticism and the possibilities here?
My first thoughts are, first, I do ride the train. I go to Philadelphia for all my entertainment. And so usually I will take, if I can get a cheap fare, I'll take a flight to New York City, switch over to Amtrak, and be there in an hour and a half. And it's cheaper. And then I also write. So then I'll ride back on the train from Philadelphia and write for 6 hours. As part of that ride, and this kind of ties into your article, because I will say I'm more disappointed in high-speed rail. I want a bullet train. I want to get cross-country. I want to get to New York in an hour or 2 hours, or Philadelphia in an hour or 2 hours. But that's...
You want the real high speed.
I want the real high speed. So I was kind of disappointed. The other thing that I wasn't... That raised a question in my mind in the article was, if we did go up to a high-speed rail, I didn't really see a significant change in the time that it would take to get from here to New York City.
That's one of the things I think Dave's pointing out.
If it's only going to give me an hour more or even 2 hours more, I don't think that's my opinion. That's not enough for me to make the leap. You know, the other thing I would comment about is the improvement in economies along the way. One of the things that struck me, and I wrote a piece about it, and I called it Gaza, when I was riding up that Northeast Corridor and seeing almost the desolation of these communities where there used to be factories, mm-hmm. where there used to be some sort of economic activity, and we don't see that anymore. So if, in fact, that this could bring that to us, I would be for it. The last comment I'll make, having worked in government, when we read an article like this, or when there are discussions laid out for the public, there's not really an understanding of how government works. And we talked about this a little bit earlier before the show. We may say, well, there's already a $5 billion deficit, and if we add this, there'll be a $6 billion deficit. And then we leap to bonds. But that's not really how government works. There's some department somewhere that's responsible for this transportation that has appropriations, that has to figure out how to balance that budget. One of the most disturbing things to me was that New York State couldn't balance its budget for how many years, and they finally managed to do that. And my feeling, based on my background, is that, yes, a budget can be balanced, and yes, a deficit can be addressed. So there's a level of inefficiency in government, and if the government system doesn't change, if the processes don't change, you could have a great engineering report, but someone has to implement mm-hmm. that plan.
Yeah.
And so I think more about the implementation aspect of it, more so than, you know, yeah, I want a bullet train.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
Everyone does, right?
Right.
All right, Arian Horbovitz, who I thought was getting ready to publish a sort of a rebuttal. Are you?
I'm in the process.
Have a rebuttal in the chamber for the Urban Phoenix?
Sure, but I still get all that information for this conversation that's relevant. First of all, you know, when the article came out and David wrote the article, you know, first and foremost, I'm a huge fan of David's work and also a huge fan of City newspaper. I just felt that kind of the hook.
Thanks, Arian.
Absolutely. I just felt like the hook for this was missing a little bit, and it wasn't really addressing to me and fellow riders. I ride Amtrak constantly. You know, I think a lot of people roll their eyes, oh man, he's on another Amtrak train when they see me post on social media. But, you know, I ride very often.
How often is very often to you?
Oh, every couple of weeks, probably.
Okay, a couple times a month.
Yeah, a couple times a month, I would say, at least. And, you know, so it's something I've become very, very familiar with over the past 5-6 years. I do it for my Urban Phoenix work. So I visit cities and I see.
I saw you were back in Utica recently.
I was just there this past weekend. I rode Amtrak there and came back, and I was 45 minutes late getting back because of freight traffic. And I actually was on time there, which never happens. Anyway, I love Amtrak. I love riding. There's no form of transportation where you can be productive, more productive than on Amtrak, more comfortable than on Amtrak. You can get up, you can walk around. The legroom you have is probably about four times as much as you do on a plane. or even a bus or something like that.
You can work? I mean, you've got internet?
I can work very easily. And you know what? If I'm in a car that's maybe loud or something like that, which rarely happens because the soundproofing in the cars is pretty good, I can go back to the cafe car and sit back in the cafe car. So you can move around. You can get work done. I've done conference calls, you know, from the train and things like that. I've done interviews from the trains, things like that. You know, it allows for that kind of business-oriented transportation that we are kind of missing here in our kind of upstate culture. Everything is dry. You know, when you're driving, unfortunately, you can't be productive. Sure, you can get to New York quicker, but you can't get a whole lot done while you're driving the car. The problem with Amtrak, and every regular rider will tell you this, is the fact that, you know, the delays that we talk about, and you mentioned in your article that the corridor that runs from, you know, here to Albany, for example, has a 70% on time rate. Well, that's just the Empire service. The Maple Leaf, which runs the line there, is 64%, and the dreaded Lake Shore Limited, which runs from Chicago to New York, has 41% on time rate. And we're not talking about on time as far as minutes. We're talking hours. Every single regular rider I've talked to, or former rider, has had what I call a never again ride, where, and I'm telling you, this happens every 10 or 15 rides where you're delayed hours.
And you're like, I'm done.
I'm not doing this again. I mean, who is going to do it? If all things being equal, if you have a choice of how to travel, that's the thing that does it. And most of those delays are caused by freight traffic. So the thing that I think people miss in this high speed rail conversation is it really doesn't have to anything to do with speed. We're talking about simply reliability. We're talking the ability, when you quote, you know, 55 miles an hour from here to there, when you're 2 hours late, that's 35 miles an hour. So the difference between not knowing whether you're going to go 35 miles an hour average from here to Albany, for example, or 55 miles an hour, you can't travel for business. You can't travel with a deadline.
Let me interject one important point for those who haven't ridden the train, and I've had the same issues, and I'm sure Tess and so many others have. When you are getting on the train, the best way to travel via train in this state, or at least via Amtrak, is to not need to be on time. And I'm not being flip either. If you don't have a deadline,
it's great.
It's less stressful.
It's amazing.
I mean, and I take the point of if you end up being 5-6 hours late, then it didn't matter if you have a deadline or not. You're still going crazy. But I don't understand how in 2020 Amtrak doesn't know if CSX is going to be on. Does they have nobody up ahead who could tell them?
No.
I mean, like, we're sitting on the train, and all of a sudden it's like we're slowing down. Why? Well, we didn't know there's going to be freight up ahead. How do you not know?
It's not a matter of not knowing. It's a matter of the freight railroads really don't have that as much of a schedule as we think they do.
Arian, my iPhone knows what color shirt I wore yesterday. How does Amtrak not know if its physical train track has anything on it?
This country is experiencing a level of economic growth and productivity that we haven't seen in some time, for example, right? So the more growth there is, the more economic activity, the more things are being shipped. You know, contrary to popular belief, freight railroads are doing extremely well in this country because we're still transporting goods and services across
the country. But I think what I'm hearing you say is it's less about – now, Tess wants the high speed. She right. wants the maglev or the bullet. I get that. You're saying
I'm talking about
people will take the train more if they know they can rely
yes.
on it.
The only way to do that right now, CSX
Separate
has
track?
Two tracks. You have to have
New track.
Dedicated track.
And I do agree with that because actually I prefer taking the train to flying. Mm-hmm. I prefer taking the train to driving because I don't really believe you get there faster by driving. Not if you hit construction.
Sure.
You can be delayed by car for hours and hours and hours, especially if you're sent on a detour. So I do agree that if we could eliminate the somehow, mm-hmm. but then who knows how much that's going
to
cost.
Evan, I'd like to jump in on what you said.
Arian's dying because he's not done yet, but go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry.
Never done.
About what you said about, you know, it's a great way to travel if you don't need to be on time.
Yeah.
And that's actually something that I wrote in my piece, you know, just read the paragraph very quickly. So naturally, a faster ride would be welcome. But how many of those Empire Corridor travelers really need faster service? Are they willing to pay for it? Would the benefits outweigh the costs? And you know, what I should have done in retrospect as an addendum to that paragraph is, you know, let's talk about who these people are. Are they college students who are traveling to NYU or some school in the city or back and forth, and it's sort of a leisurely ride? Are these
demographics?
Yeah, right. Or are these business travelers who need to be at that meeting in Schenectady at 2:30? Well, and I don't know that we know that.
Even that concert in Philadelphia at 3 p.m.
Something that has a hard start.
Yeah, so what I do is the same thing I do when I fly. I take that into account. So I may leave a day earlier and stay overnight to make sure I'm there on time.
Arian, go ahead.
But, you know, in saying that, you know, when I ride, I see, you know, to your credit, yeah, I see people of all walks of life. There are, you know, college students. It's a great way for college students to travel across the state. Another kind of misnomer that I want to kind of put out there is this thought that, you know, everyone that gets on at Rochester is just going to New York City. That's not the case. I would say about, you can actually see they divide up the passengers per where they're going. New York travelers over here and everywhere else over here. It's typically about half and half. So what I think that's the misconception. There are people traveling across the state, and this is these are across demographics. I can't tell you the level of diversity of people from walks of life that I've met. The thing that I don't see, and the thing that you do see when you go, like for example, down the Northeast Corridor where Amtrak does own its own track, is you know a tremendous amount of business travelers because it's prohibitive. The delays are prohibitive. I really believe that if we're in serious conversation, and I'm not saying we should do this. I'm not. I'm skeptical of the cost too. Let me throw that out there too. I am 100% skeptical anytime a number balloons that. I am not a hopeless optimist, right? I do believe we have to enter this conversation about a better way to move across our state and a way to invigorate our upstate cities. Now, as you pointed out, David, the results are mixed on this, but transit-oriented development—
In terms of the economic benefits.
Exactly.
To each city.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But I do think that, you know, if we're serious about a better economic future for upstate New York, we have to do something bold and different. I think what we've done is not working. I think there is— One thing I do see when I travel to these cities across New York State, and I'm talking like, you know, I'm not talking necessarily Albany and what I'm talking about Troy. I'm talking about Binghamton. I'm talking about, Schenectady. There's money coming out of New York City. There are people you can't afford to do work or live in New York City anymore for most people. Hudson, New York is on the Amtrak line just south of Albany, right? And that has more frequent and more reliable service. They have 3% of Rochester's population, but 60% higher ridership. And you go to any business owner in that little town of 6,200 people, and they will tell you they are absolutely reliant on consistent and regular Amtrak service for their ridership. Now, is Rochester Hudson? No. Are we a little farther away from New York? Yes, absolutely. But the money, what I find is coming out of New York, follows kind of the veins of convenience. And I think that if we're serious about kind of injecting some life into upstate New York, we can tap into that. We can tap into that possibility of that event horizon of money coming out of New York City.
Our phone lines are going to be swamped in a second. I see the lines blowing up. And to Arian's point about the never again ride, Marisa says never again. For me, Lakeshore Limited, Chicago to Rochester, 16 hours.
Yep.
Missed an entire day of work.
16 hours late or 16 hours total?
I'm just reading a 16-hour. What should Chicago to Rochester be? I don't know.
It's about if it's on time.
10, 11?
It's 11, 11:40, I think.
All right, so maybe only 5 hours
late.
You missed an entire day of work. And so I get that experience can sort of get people off of rail. And for those hearing Arian say, well, Hudson, New York, which, by the way, is an awesome little town.
It's awesome.
One of the really great gems in this state. But for people thinking, you're going to take an hour ride to go work? You are if you're not driving a car.
Right.
You could go an hour each way easy if you are productive and working.
Absolutely.
And maybe you could do that more upstate, you know, and commute farther than you currently do if you don't need a car. A question before we get to phone calls. In a moment, we'll get there. And let me ask all of you on this. I don't know, David, in the past, if the proposals have been separate new track or using existing infrastructure? Do you know?
No, it's always separate track. You can't use existing infrastructure.
You can't.
CSX.
There were two tracks.
That ain't changing. That's not changing. Okay, so this is about separate track, and we don't have current cost estimates for what this would look like.
Well, we have the 2014.
That's the newest is the point. So, David, do you have an open mind to what New York State's going to come back with? Or, again, do you think that the governor said, here's what we're going to do, find a way to get there?
I think it's the latter.
Okay.
I think he's saying, here's what we're going to do, find a way to get there. Whether it's possible, I think, remains to be seen. There were in that previous study, there were five different options, and one of them was to basically do nothing, and that was but still update the tracks to get Amtrak off of CSX, and that would cost $290 million. The train would still run roughly the same speed, but without the delays. That to me seems to me to be a really worthwhile investment in the interim.
That would be priority one.
Wait,
absolutely.
To get them off the tracks, where do they go?
That you have to build a new track.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to build. You'd have to lay new track.
I've said for a long time, really dedicated rail would. You know, if I know that I can leave here and arrive, you know, within 95% of the time, arrive at my destination in a on time, I can tell you that ridership would increase. I have no data to prove that, to be perfectly honest, but I can tell you this.
Evan, I know you're eager to get to phone calls, but I want to touch on something that Arian said in regards to not assuming that everyone on Amtrak is headed to New York City. I think you're absolutely right on that, and I'm not a frequent traveler, although I have traveled Amtrak. I received a couple of letters to the editor that said as much, so I believe that's true. Interestingly enough, though, the experts on high-speed rail sort of put the sweet spot at real high-speed rail between 150 miles and 600 miles. And a couple of years ago before
You mean a total track? Not a single trip for a rider?
No, that's... No, a single trip for
a rider.
Rider.
Okay.
Is anywhere lower than that, like less than 150
they don't use
miles,
it very much?
It's easier to drive,
I guess.
Is what the argument is.
Okay.
And anything more, it's easier to fly.
Of course.
So that sweet spot is 150 to 600. So I recall a couple of years ago before Congresswoman Louise Slaughter passed away, she had proposed using some federal funds to just get the thing started. You know, she was a big proponent of high-speed rail. This train station is named after her. To get the thing started, let's just start building this track from Rochester to Buffalo. The ride, if at 125 miles per hour, would be 42 minutes as opposed to, what is it now?
An hour 15.
An hour 15, roughly.
About an hour and
if
change.
If it's on time. So that would be a welcome change. Now, that being said... Yeah, and could you get work done on the train in 40 minutes? Sure you could, and it would be a lot more comfortable than your car. That being said, by the time you drive to the train station or take a bus to
park,
the train station, get a ticket, wait, because you want to be at least 10 minutes early if it's on time even.
Right.
You're still looking at the same amount of travel time it would take and more expensive than it would be to drive.
So it has to be faster.
Faster, or you're looking at those sweet spots. Now,
yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is Rochester to Syracuse, Rochester to even Utica, and Rochester to Buffalo aren't necessarily prime sweet spots for high-speed rail. It's really Rochester to Albany, Rochester
Absolutely.
To New York.
Mm-hmm. Or the Connections podcast zone. That 42 minutes is almost 1 hour of connection. So people would still wait the extra 10 minutes, get the ticket, then ride to Buffalo.
I love it.
Tess, are you someone who thinks, it sounds like your work in government has made you a little skeptical of what you're seeing in New York State. Do you think that they can manage this?
Yes, I am skeptical. And I also want to go back to something that Arian said about building the economies of these small communities on the line. What I would say, again, from my perspective is in doing the analysis, that has to be part of the analysis.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're putting the cart before the horse. Let's just build this rail and then the economies will come.
No.
This is what I'm saying is that if the governor is just talking about getting an engineering team together, there should be an economic team together that says these are the economic contributions or these are how the economies in these specific places can grow by having a faster rail system. If you do one without the other, then the only way you'll find out if it works is trial by error.
I think it's a very good point. And I'm late for our only break. So if you're on the phone, Gary, Brad, Robin, we're going to come take your calls after our only break of the hour as we continue the conversation about high-speed rail in New York State. By the way, we've invited the governor to come on this program and talk about it, and we hope that he will. So we'll see if we can get the governor's input on this some in the days and weeks to come here, because certainly this will be one of the hotter topics in Albany in this legislative session. David Andriotta is the editor of City Newspaper. Arian Horbovitz, the creator of the Urban Phoenix blog. Tess Padmore is here. She's president of Wolf Clan LLC, and in a previous life worked for state government and transportation in Alaska. Let's get that break and your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, the cast of This Old House joins us on Connections. The PBS show is hitting 40 years, a celebration that's taken them around the country, and today the crew is in Rochester. They've got a live event at Hochstein tonight. The WXXI is helping host. But first, you will meet some of the cast right here on Connections. We'll answer questions about trends in home improvement, some of your questions, and more with This Old House next hour. Brad in Rochester says he's lived in Rochester 25 years and for a long time did not live close to the tracks. Now he does. He's observed freight from above, and he agrees with Arian's point. He says he thinks people do not understand how much freight traffic we have. It's a lot more than the average person thinks. So
it's incredible. This is really the main line across the country. So
all right, let me get to Robin in Farmington first on the phone. Go ahead, Robin.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that I totally agree. I know this is a New York State thing, and my son takes the Lakeshore Limited back and forth to Cleveland to college because we are not of means where he can have his own car, and it costs a lot to just park a car for a semester in Cleveland. So he's also graduating in urban planning, so he's very hot on different modes of transportation. So, he's been stuck. It takes 4 hours from our house to Cleveland to get him, and he is consistently 2 to 4 hours late when he takes it. So it kind of doesn't make any sense for him to take the train anymore when I can drive him in 4 hours, and it costs nearly the same. So I understand that but we have to cross states. So the train is going through from New York to, all the way up to Chicago. So you're crossing. There needs to be some congruency as well, given our neighbor states. So I'll take comments off here.
All right, Robin, thanks very much for that. What do you think, Arian?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, we're not just talking about New York State. It's important to be able to get, everywhere conveniently and speedily, if that's a word. It's not. But, the thing that, anywhere where we can kind of maximize the amount of track that Amtrak owns specifically for passenger service is going to lessen the chance for delays. So, for example, and Tess knows this, up and down the Northeast Corridor is really the only place where Amtrak owns its own track. So between Boston and Washington, D.C., it's an extremely fast – it's not – that the speed of the trains is not physically that much faster than what we experience here. Maximum speed on these tracks is 79. Maximum on there, I think, is 125, but usually closer to 100. So, in those sections, I mean, whenever you're traveling from, for example, Philadelphia to Rochester, you at least have that section to New York to bridge over to, the route that goes to Rochester. You're not going to be delayed for that part. So the more we can kind of chip away at this, dedicated track issue and make sure that our on-time rates are better, that's going to be the key for Amtrak going forward across the country, not just across the state.
But Tess, when I think about you going to Philadelphia, you said, right? I'm thinking here's Jackie on Twitter who says, as of 2018, only one train goes from Rochester to Toronto, takes 6 hours. I use Toronto Airport for international flights. I don't dare risk missing a flight. Megabus is $18 and it runs much better options. I'd rather take the train, but not a lot of good options. Do you worry about traveling, especially if you're going out of state? Because we're talking about New York State high-speed rail.
Right.
But does the track end at the state line? What would your travel to Philadelphia mean?
Well, what I have found, I've opted not to use Megabus, even though it's cheaper. I'm just not a bus person. I agree with Arian.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer having the freedom on a train, where I can get up and move around, and I do get a lot of work done. Philadelphia, from New York City to Philadelphia, I think it's 90 miles, maybe the same distance as Rochester to Buffalo. And it takes an hour and a half by train. I've never experienced a delay, ever. I get on that train and I'm there in an hour and a half. I also live in East Rochester, right by the train tracks.
Of course, yeah.
So, yes, the freight traffic is constant. But what I also find is there's a lot of time when those freight trains just sit there.
Mm-hmm.
Amtrak also goes past us. So I agree with you that we do need the separate track.
People don't realize that, you know, freight trains, there's only so many places where the tracks cross over, right? And that's something that you don't think about when you think about, well, why don't, it's like moving to a different lane on a highway, right? It's not like that with trains. Since they're fixed in the ground, it makes them very efficient. But there's not a whole lot of places to, for example, if there's a slower, longer train, to run around that train. So those are where the delays happen. Since you only have two tracks, that's the reality of it.
My last time coming back from Philadelphia, we had a two-hour delay because mm-hmm. of a freight train.
Hmm. All right, Gary in Rochester next. Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, thanks, Evan. Two things real quick, and one thing that just came up because of the trip to Toronto. My wife and I, like two summers ago, wanted to go to a Yankees-Blue Jays series, and we decided to take the train to Toronto. And I'll tell you what, it couldn't have been better. I mean, you do have a delay at the border because they have to check the train and they have to check everybody's passports, et cetera, et cetera. But we were there in 4.5 hours. And here's what we didn't have. We didn't have to drive on the QEW.
Mm-hmm.
We arrived in Toronto across the street from the York Hotel where we stayed. I mean, we walked across the street. We were 3 blocks from Rogers Center. And it was so easy. You can't drive there. In much less time, certainly a lot less stressful. But what I did want to point out, Evan, if I could, is I used to take the train on a regular basis to New York City with a position I used to have. And I think what people have to keep in mind is one, I don't know where the 7 or 9 hours. I routinely made it there in 6. Once made it in 5.5. And agreed, the problem is we need a separate line. But I do want people to keep this in mind in this conversation. When I would take the train to New York City, I would leave my house a half an hour before the train left. My wife would drop me off. I'd get out of the car and walk on the train, and I was gone. When I arrived in Penn Station in Manhattan, I was a 10-minute walk from my hotel. If I fly to New York City, I got to get to the airport at least an hour early. I land in JFK, and I got to take the air train, which is a 1 to 2 hour trip into the city. So you got to start adding all those things in. And my last point is this, we talk about the delays with the train, but we don't even think twice if we're told, like, yeah, my flight's leaving a half hour later, my flight was delayed 2 hours, my flight was canceled, or I sat on a tarmac for 45 minutes. When you add all that stuff in, there's not that big a difference. And a separate line is the way to go. It really doesn't need to be high speed. Thanks.
Well, Gary, thank you. I mean, I think there's a lot of agreement on the separate line. But then if we're going to stay on the same line question, Thomas wants to know, what would it take to restrict CSX trains from leaving at certain times when Amtrak is scheduled?
You can't. No,
it's not going to happen.
They own the tracks. I mean, they've been round and round about this at the federal level for a very long time. At the end of the day, I think the real big thing is it really doesn't look good when a government subsidized passenger train company is telling a private rail owner what to do. But there's a lot more to that subject than that. But
yeah, it sounds like that caller got very lucky on his trip to Toronto. And as mm-hmm. someone who frequents the QEW, I was just on it. 2 weekends ago. You don't want to be driving on that to Toronto, especially during any time really during the workday from 8 a.m. till 7 p.m. Forget
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Once you hit the Burlington Skyway, you might as well just park. It sounds like he got lucky, but, you know, he finished his call. I don't know if anyone caught it, but at the end he said high-speed rail isn't necessary. I think he just had a lucky trip. Again, I'm wondering if we had that dedicated rail, if we paid that, you know, several hundred million dollars as opposed to the billions and billions it would cost for high-speed rail, if we just had that dedicated rail, if we'd have more satisfied customers like that caller who would get to New York at least on time and not be delayed. I mean, well, that seems to be the biggest frustration.
So why, if it's, $300 million to create a dedicated rail? I don't know what it was. Is that the number I heard?
Yeah,
something like $293
well,
million?
Well, it's the do-nothing option in 2014. It was $290 million. The trip time from New York to Niagara Falls was still 9 hours at that. But it wouldn't include the delays.
No delays. I mean, that's the Amtrak line now.
That would be the Amtrak line.
Why is that not considered more realistically than all of these other multi-billion-dollar options?
It's too simple.
I wish it doesn't cost as much. People can't make enough money building it.
Well, sometimes that is the issue. Sometimes it is too simple. You know, there's the old business example where you have the engineers and everyone else coming up with these great plans, and then finally they implement the plan and they get to the person on the factory line that says, yeah, but you forgot to push that button. Something that simple. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I want to read for you the feature of the do nothing alternative, just so we're clear.
From the 2014 study.
From the 2014 study for $290 million. Improvements to the existing right of way, new and redeveloped train stations, high level boarding platforms, 20 miles of new tracks. So I don't know where that would be exactly. Signals and track improvements such as grade crossings to enhance safety, security, and convenience.
Wait. 20 miles? You need more.
You need more. So
20 miles of new track could be, sorry to interrupt, could be a siding issue.
I misspoke when I said that would take care of all of the track from Niagara Falls to Albany. The base alternative. Obviously, 20 miles isn't going to cut it. But what they're saying here is that would reduce the delays significantly, according to this study. But it would still take 9 hours to get from Niagara Falls to New York, which is about roughly the driving time if you stop at a for a burger.
Go ahead, Aaron.
That's a great point. But if we're talking about cost effectiveness and simply improving the on time rate, we have to consider that if that's a much lower cost, then that might be a low hanging fruit here. Mm-hmm. Again, Amtrak does have other amenities that typical mode of transportation does not, and while a higher speed option would certainly be great, the thing that I think that gets lost in this is that option's not sexy, right? It doesn't, being able to see high speed is something that it kind of turns people on and it really kind of widens eyes. The fact is, usually, as we all know, usually the best solutions are the ones that kind of really talk about, let's make it, instead of high speed, high consistency, high reliability, and more frequent. That's, to me, what transportation is.
How's this for sexy, Arian? In the do-nothing alternative, the average speed is 51 miles per hour,
yes,
and with a max at 79 miles per hour,
yes.
Which is basically where we are now.
And there
That's
will be
exactly
a place
where we are.
For 8-track tapes.
And beta.
Beta max.
You got it, Tess. All right, back to the phones we go. Jack in Geneva. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, Evan. Thank you. I have a couple of comments. My wife and I took this Lakeshore Limited to Chicago, and believe it or not, it was only 45 minutes late pulling into Union Station, which was really quite a feat. But the second thing is, when the New York Central built the railroad, which we're now talking about, which is owned by, what is it, Norfolk Southern?
CSX.
They had a 4-track main line, and they had dedicated passenger rail service pretty much all the way to Chicago, but certainly mm-hmm. through the state. And I believe that right-of-way still exists for the most part. So I think that this owning the track and a separate track and so forth, I think would be it would be costly, but it would be relatively easy rather than looking to build a brand new right of way and all the attendant bridges and grade crossings, etc. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out because I think it still exists, and I think with a minimal amount of additional building and infrastructure and so forth, the track could be laid. Hmm. And I'll take my answer off
right.
the phone.
All right, Jack, thank you.
I can tell you that I had a reader contact me after I wrote my piece who said that, who alluded to the same thing, that there were these four tracks.
Yep, it's a 4-track main line.
And that the original agreement was that Amtrak would have its own dedicated line. I don't. He didn't cite any sources. But it rings. It's along the same lines as what this caller said. So I'd love to learn more about that too.
I know of that. I know. I've also been told that. I don't have my source on this is somebody like I don't have a quote or anything like that, but I have heard that CSX has been certainly resistant to that idea. You know, it's like anything else. If you own property, if you own a place and another company wants to build on that, it's going to take a lot of conversation, a lot of effort, and probably a lot of resources.
Let me hit some email feedback before we jump back to the phones. George in Fairport says, I fail to understand why it's not possible to create a computer system which can control a mix of freight and passenger trains with reasonable priorities. It's just a matter of the fact that right now CSX owns the tracks.
They have an awful lot of freight. Anybody who really, you know, kind of sits by there and watches, not only are these trains frequent, they're extremely long. Yes. So that's the other
thing.
We're not talking about we're talking about trains that are, you know, 3/4 of a mile long. So, you know, trying to get around that on two tracks is people don't realize there is a computer system, a very high functioning one in place that considers a lot of variables and a lot of information, and still it is the way it is.
So Edward says, I travel to New York City by Amtrak 3 times yearly to visit family members who reside in Brooklyn and Queens. I don't want a bullet train if it means losing the great slower scenic view and an outrageous increase in ticket prices. The current speed is fine with me. I can tell you, having used a bullet train in Europe, you still get the scenery. It's pretty awesome. So I'm not as worried as you are about that, Edward. But let me ask, and especially someone who's worked in state government, are you concerned about ticket prices? And should this be, whatever the option is, we haven't talked much about people who don't own cars, people who need other options. How important is it, you know, that kind of consideration for this?
As a traveler, I would be willing to pay more. I'd also like to kind of step back a bit. My idea of the whole bullet train thing is really national, not state level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I want to be able to go to California. I want to be able to go to other states. Along that corridor, I'm fine with this idea of a separate dedicated line to get us where we want to go on time. I'm also one of the lucky ones. Anytime that I've ever taken the train in Toronto, it's only taken 4 hours. Anytime I've driven, it's like, oh my goodness, where am I? It's fast, it's easy. I get off, I'm right there, and everything's in walking distance. But I am a believer of, if you want something and it is a convenience to you, I am willing to pay more.
Okay. Sarah says, a lot of conversation and no discussion about climate change. Is that part of this discussion, climate change, changing modes of transportation?
I think it has to. You know, something that I am going to put in this article that I kind of wanted to post before this on the Urban Phoenix is, you know, the fact that at some point, right, at some point where we're talking about all these things, we're talking about climate change, we're talking about the minimization of the automobile, which is the number one CO2 polluter, you know, at some point, don't we have to get a little bit bold somewhere? Doesn't someone have to take that first step and say, we're doing this. This is happening. And we're going to do it because it's more efficient. It's better for our planet. And it's, you know, we can't just keep funneling money into a failing infrastructure that we've overbuilt for the automobile. Now, that's a lot of what I talk about on the Urban Phoenix. But, you know, I'm not saying that this has to be the project. I'm just saying that at some point we have to start getting bold about these initiatives when we're talking about a more efficient way to travel.
And maybe this is in that category.
Yeah, and I've received letters to the editor to that effect as well. I mean, here's one, just the first sentence. You know, with 2019 ending as the second hottest year on record, and with the past five years as the 5 warmest on record, the need to reduce carbon emissions sharply is distressingly clear. And he goes on to say that there's more to this than just the upfront cost and what the market will bear.
Okay, Jim says the marketing is wrong here. Dedicated passenger rail sounds safe and smart. High-speed rail sounds extravagant. So Jim is saying, reframe your marketing and tell people we're going to create dedicated passenger rail.
Well, you know, what Cuomo is talking about, again, isn't even high-speed rail. It is higher-speed rail. And honestly, the 125-mile-an-hour max that he's referring to is something that costs was estimated to cost $15 billion in 2014. I think that's just going to be too expensive for New York to handle in the future. So I agree with this writer, emailer. You know, if Cuomo would just stop talking about quote unquote high speed rail and talk about, like what Arian said, consistency, efficiency, I think he'd get a lot farther. I think he'd get a lot more buy-in.
Well, it's in language that people can understand.
Mm.
Because when you say high speed rail, immediately you're thinking,
I'm
zipping mm-hmm. somewhere and it's going to change how I'm going. But it's not really what he's talking about. So I agree. Keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Do you think the state's going to put together a sort of a cogent, sober plan about this year?
No.
No.
Arian, you want to take a shot at that as we get ready to wrap the hour?
Sure. I'm glad that we're revisiting the conversation. I hope that we look seriously, Tess, like you said, about economic growth. I hope that's a big piece of it and not just the engineering of it, because I do believe in transit-oriented investment, especially this day and age. People don't realize how much in this country, transportation, new transportation initiatives, even if ridership is low, creates tremendous private investment in an area. That's something really that needs to get looked at here. The other piece of it is, too, the one thing I wanted to add real quick is that Amtrak is really on the rise. Their new CEO, he's very controversial, Richard Anderson. He comes from Delta Airlines, and he is very cleanly just cutting the fat out of Amtrak, and they are poised to turn a profit for the first time in existence this year. They increased by almost 1 million riders this year, and he has really things economically for the organization going in the right direction. So a lot of momentum for Amtrak right now.
Very interesting. Bonnie finishes the program by saying, I'm tired of being told it's okay that my train is delayed. I am a business traveler. I need a schedule I can rely on. I bought a ticket with the expectation of timeliness. I don't need someone to tell me my expectations are not a priority because I'm on a train.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bonnie speaks for the business class of this state, and that's why they're not riding the trains, as we're talking about. Maybe that changes. We will track this debate. I did not mean to use a ridiculous pun there, but thanks to David Andriotta and City Newspaper for always provocative and interesting content. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Evan.
Our thanks to Arian Horbovitz. Find him on the Urban Phoenix online. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Tess Padmore. Talk to you again soon. Good luck
Thank
on the
you.
Future rides to Philly. Thank you very much. More Connections coming up.